6. Take me far, far away. The Jade Saber came out of hyperspace for the last leg of its journey to Coruscant. Jaina handled all the plotting, engaging and disengaging the hyperdrive, with Mara watching over her, and now, back at Sublight, Mara was so confident in the girl that she gave her the bridge alone. Leia was surprised when she entered to see her daughter sitting comfortably at the controls, with Mara nowhere in sight. "Where's your aunt?" she asked. Jaina turned, her smile wide. "She said she was tired." Leia moved to take the seat beside Jaina. "How long to Coruscant?" she asked. 2 hours," Jaina replied. "Mara told me to come out of Lightspeed early because of the heavy traffic in the region. She wants me to wake her up before the final approach." Leia nodded and sat back. She too was tired, tired of it all. Over the last years, she kept resigning her posts and then allowing herself to be dragged back in, often poignantly reminded, or reminding herself, that a million lives could hang in the balance. Leia was considered among the finest diplomats in the New Republic hierarchy, the one person whose heroic reputation, negotiating skills, and true empathy would allow her to intervene in pending crises. She closed her eyes and gave a self-deprecating chuckle, reminding herself that all those skills and reputation had done absolutely nothing to help the Osarian-Romamul situation. The Romamulians had many legitimate complaints against Osarian. The Osarians lived much better than their Romamulian counterparts, relaxing in luxury off the labors of the miners. And it was no secret that the Romamulians were greatly underrepresented in the Osarian government. Now, though, those complaints had been compounded and exploited, turned into something zealous and religious in nature, and what should have been a workers' arbitration was in danger of becoming a holy war. In great danger, Leia now understood, for in all her years she had rarely dealt with anyone as intractable as Nom Anor, or at least as intractable as Nom Anor, given the fact that the man and the people he was supposedly representing were likely going to get annihilated in a war they could not win. After the disastrous meeting, Leia had made many calls to him from her post on the Mediator, and he had answered every one, usually just to tell her that he had no time to speak with her. With those annoying thoughts in mind, Leia drifted off to sleep. "Wow," Jaina breathed, and Leia popped open her eyes, thinking there might be trouble. "What is it?" she asked with obvious alarm. "Mon Calamari Star Defender," Jaina answered, pointing toward the upper left quadrant of the screen. With a flick of her other hand, she angled the viewer to bring the beautiful ship into complete view. And it was spectacular. Like all the Mon Calamari ships, this one was unique, an artwork, sleek and flowing and ultimately deadly. It was the largest ship ever produced on that watery world, nearly twice the size of the battle cruiser they had left behind between Osarian and Romamul, and the first Mon Calamari Star Defender produced for the New Republic fleet. "The Viscount," Leia remarked, "just commissioned 2 weeks ago. It must be making a flyby for the approval of the Council." "Wow," Jaina breathed again, those brown eyes sparkling. Leia silently laughed at herself. When she had heard Jaina's gasp, she had immediately assumed there was trouble, and she had worried that Jaina couldn't handle it. She examined her apparent lack of confidence in her daughter then, and for a moment believed she must be a terrible mother to think so little of the proven girl. No, not girl, Leia reminded herself. Young woman. When she had first come in, after finishing the report of the brewing disaster on Romamul, and seen Jaina alone, her heart had skipped a beat. Yet Mara, as competent a pilot and responsible an adult as Leia had ever known, had seen fit to leave Jaina on her own. Why couldn't Leia hold that same confidence in her own child? She studied Jaina carefully, the sureness of her movements, the calm expression on her face. "How close now?" she asked. Jaina shrugged. "You were asleep for over an hour," she explained. "We've got another half hour, maybe, depending on the course they tell us to follow." I'll go get Mara, Leia offered, climbing out of her chair and stretching away the last remnants of sleep. You could let her rest, Jaina suggested. I can bring the jade saber down. Leia thought it over for a moment. Yes, Jaina could land the shuttle with no problems, and Leia was an experienced pilot and could watch over her all the way, and Mara could certainly use all the rest she could find. She almost agreed. Almost. And again came those nagging doubts about the way she mothered Jaina. It's Mara's ship, she said. To land it without her explicit permission would be a slight against her. Glad for the etiquette dodge, Leia smiled and patted Jaina's shoulder. I know you'd put it down so softly that Mara wouldn't even shift in her bed, she said, and she winked at Jaina when the young woman looked up at her. That brought a smile to Jaina's face, and Leia patted her shoulder again and left the bridge, heading for Mara's room. She paused outside the door and lifted her hand to knock, but then hesitated, hearing quiet sounds coming from within. Leia put her ear to the door and listened carefully. She heard only an occasional sniffle, and Leia understood that Mara was crying. Mara? She called softly and knocked on the door. No reply, and Leia pushed the button and let the door slide away. Mara sat on her bed, her back to Leia, her shoulders hunched slightly, as if she had just gotten control of her emotions. Are you all right? Leia asked. Mara nodded. Leia moved over and sat on the bed beside her, draping her arm across Mara's shoulders, as soon as she recognized the moistness rimming the woman's eyes. What is it? She asked softly. Mara sat up straighter and took a deep breath, ending in a forced smile. Nothing at all, she answered. Leia stared at her skeptically. A dream, Mara clarified. And when I woke up, I was just being foolish. Do you want to talk about it? Mara shrugged. Leia waited a moment longer, but the other woman apparently would not offer anything more. We're nearing Coruscant, Leia explained. Would you like me to help Jaina bring her in? I can do it, Mara assured her. She rose and started for the door, a step full of stiffness that brought a wince to her face. Leia was up in an instant, hooking Mara under the arm for support. I just slept in a twisted position, Mara tried to explain, but Leia, not buying that for a moment, didn't let go. She came around Mara's side and gently forced her to sit back on the edge of the bed. It's not the way you slept, she said. It's the disease, isn't it? Mara looked up at her, successfully fighting back any trace of tears. It came on again a little while ago, she admitted. Leia sighed and shook her head, wishing there was something, anything, she could do to help her sister-in-law, her dear friend. That's fairly common, you said, she prompted. Is there something different about the attack this time? Mara looked away. You have to tell me, Leia said, more sternly than she had intended, and the look Mara returned to her, not of anger or violation, but more of incredulity, set Leia back. Why did Mara have to tell her after all? It wasn't as if she could do anything to help the woman. All of the others who had come down with this disease had told their doctors, and had subsequently been referred to the best physicians in the New Republic. All of them had detailed every twinge, every ache, and had begged for any help at all. They were all dead, or soon would be. I'm sorry, Leia said, that disturbing thought hanging thick in her mind. You don't have to tell me anything. She leaned forward and kissed Mara on the cheek, then rose to leave, offering the woman her hand. Mara took that hand, but instead of getting up, she pulled Leia back down to the bed beside her. Then she stared long and hard into Leia's eyes. My womb, this time, she said. Leia crinkled her face, not understanding. This illness, Mara explained. It came to me again while I slept, this time attacking my womb. Leia's eyes widened with fear. Did you defeat it? Mara nodded and managed a slight smile. It won't kill me yet, she replied, with a less than comforting chuckle. Leia nodded, full of admiration for this strong and stoic woman. Every time the disease had cropped up, Mara had focused her strength, had focused the force inward and beat it back. But it was more difficult this time, Leia remarked, thinking she had the answer to Mara's uncharacteristic tearful reaction. The woman shook her head. "Not so bad an attack," she replied. "Then what?" Leia asked. Mara took another deep breath. "My womb," she said solemnly. Then it hit Leia fully. "You're afraid you might not be able to have any children," she said. "I'm not so young anymore," Mara answered with a self-deprecating chuckle. It was true enough. Mara, like Leia and Luke, was past 40, but except for the disease, she was very healthy and, as far as Leia knew, still able to have kids. Leia surely understood the woman's concerns, though, given the disease's attack on her very core of womanhood. "When I married your brother, we talked about having kids," Mara explained. "He had watched your three grow so strong and wonderful, and more than anything in the world, we both wanted our own." "You can still have them," Leia assured her. "Perhaps," Mara answered. "But who knows, Leia? I'm growing tired of fighting, and this disease shows no signs of letting up." "Nor is it gaining any ground," Leia reminded. "I haven't given up," Mara assured her. "But I can't have kids now. I don't even know if I'd pass this along to them, or if they'd be killed by it inside of me. And who knows when it will be over, or if it will have caused too much damage for me to ever have them." Leia wanted to say something reassuring, but how could she possibly dismiss Mara's obviously well-grounded logic? She put her arm on the woman's shoulder. "You have to keep hoping," she said. Mara managed a smile. "I will," she promised. "Besides, I've got Jaina under my wing now, and that's almost as good." A quick flash across Leia's face betrayed her. "What?" Mara asked with concern. Leia blushed and laughed out loud. "What?" "There have been times when I've been so jealous of you and Jaina," Leia admitted, smiling with every word. "I see the bond between you, and I feel both wonderful that Jaina has found so inspiring a friend and mentor, and awful. When I see the two of you working together, I want to rush over and hug you and choke you all at once." Mara's expression revealed true concern until Leia fell over her, wrapping her in a tight hug. "Oh, you'll beat this," Leia said. "You will, and you'll have babies. And maybe soon after you, Jaina will have her own." She pushed Mara back to arm's length. "And won't that be fun?" she asked. "The three of us sitting around, trading stories, while Luke gets to babysit them all." It was the perfect thing to say at that moment, and the edges of Mara's lips turned up just a bit into a smile, and a flash of hope crossed her vivid green eyes. Leia knew, though, as she and Mara headed back to the bridge, that it might well be a fleeting hope, and an image of herself and Jaina sitting and talking to Jaina's babies about their brave, deceased great-aunt Mara nearly broke her down at that moment. Nearly. But she held back the tears. She had to. They all had to. For Mara's sake. Jason heard the telltale hiss and electric snapping as he approached the main chamber of the Millennium Falcon. Anakin was in there, he realized, and practicing with his lightsaber again. Always practicing. Normally, Jason would leave his little brother alone, knowing that the two of them simply couldn't come to any philosophical agreements in their present states of mind. This time, though, after the spectacle of the council meeting, Jason was in the mood for a good argument, and so he moved through the hatch. There was Anakin, soaked in sweat, dodging and turning, his lightsaber flashing to parry each of the many energy zaps of the small remote as it floated all about him, seeking a hole in his defenses. His little brother was getting good, Jason had to admit, as Anakin brought the glowing blade down and across to the left, up high to the left, and back over to the right in a flashing sequence, each movement neatly picking off an energy missile. The sequence ended, and Anakin clicked his blade off and stood breathing heavily. Jason started a slow, almost mocking clap. "Could you do as well?" Anakin asked, before he had even turned around to face his brother. "Does it matter?" Jason replied. Anakin crinkled his face in disdain and snorted. "You spend half your life dancing around with that thing," Jason commented. "We're Jedi Knights, or soon to be," Anakin replied. "And all the Jedi should spend all their waking hours alone dancing about with remotes," Jason said sarcastically. "You practice," Anakin retorted. "And I spend more time alone than you do," Jason agreed. Anakin looked at him skeptically, as if to ask, given that admission, what the problem might be. "There is a reason for the solitude and the practice," Jason tried to explain. "To hone our skills," Anakin replied. Jason was shaking his head before his little brother had even finished that expected response. "To deepen our understanding," he said. "That again?" "That always," Jason said firmly. "When you are practicing, what are you thinking about?" Again, the skeptical expression. "Are you fantasizing that you're hunting outlaw Gamorreans?" Jason asked, "saving the galaxy as Dad once did?" "When I'm in the practice regimen, my mind is clear of clutter," Anakin replied. But again, Jason shook his head, unsatisfied with the answer. "Right before you fall fully into the Force," he clarified, "and right after. What are you thinking about?" Anakin's expression turned to one of anger. "What are you thinking at those times?" Jason pressed. "What fantasy battles do you wage in these sessions?" "Why does it matter?" Anakin snapped. "Because that's not the truth of the Force," Jason answered just as sharply. "You keep thinking of it as a tool, a weapon in your war against everything you see as bad. But that is such a limiting philosophy." "It is a weapon," Anakin replied slowly. "A powerful weapon, and a great responsibility." Jason shook his head. "Those are the minor truths of the Force," he said. "The ones that so many like you focus on to satisfy your personal hunger for glory." Anakin seemed as if he was about to spit. "The Force is a method of serenity and truth, not an outward-projecting tool to be used to further any single person's perception of good," Jason lectured. "Do you think the New Republic is evil?" Anakin scoffed. "Neither good nor evil," Jason explained, taking no offense. "But I don't agree with all of their actions. Certainly individual communities have suffered at their hands, just like during the reign of the Emperor. But this time, in actions taken for the greater good," Anakin argued vehemently, obviously not pleased with hearing any comparison between the New Republic and the Old Empire. Jason merely chuckled, the simple, mocking reaction having the effect of turning Anakin's words around so that the younger brother had to recognize the subtle truth in them. "I'm getting sick of hearing all of this," Anakin remarked. "You'll hear it until you learn the truth," Jason replied immediately. "That is my responsibility." "Uncle Luke told you that?" "This isn't about him," Jason replied. "It's about you and me." "He's going to put the Jedi Council back together," Anakin said, as if those words gave him a victory. "He has to," Jason said, his tone making it clear that he wasn't happy about the admission. "Or risk disaster because of the other Jedi Knights like you, running through the galaxy, righting every wrong." He waved his hands dismissively at his brother and turned to leave, but before he had gone two steps, Anakin grabbed him by the shoulder and pulled him about. Anakin held up the pommel of his lightsaber. "This," he said emphatically, "is an instrument of law." "No," Jason snarled in his face. "That is a tool through which a Jedi might look inside himself and find his inner peace, a measuring stick for his acceptance of the Force." Anakin's expression revealed clearly that he didn't get the point at all. To deny full entrance of the Force during such a practice session will weaken your parries and get you stung, and often, Jason replied. It's not about waging war, Anakin. It's about finding peace and your place in the galaxy. Pretty words that mean nothing when the fighting starts, Anakin retorted. A Jedi at peace is a better warrior by far, Jason said. Prove it. Anakin accentuated his challenge by turning on the blade, causing it to flash and hum to life right before Jason's face. If I must, to get the point through your thick skull, Jason answered, calmly walking by. He turned to face Anakin and brought his own lightsaber to glowing life before him. Anakin closed the hatch. Uncle Luke wouldn't be happy to find them sparring in here, nor would their father, and turned back to face his brother, who was already moving in closer with deliberate, measured steps. "Maybe you'll admit the truth when I beat you," Anakin said. But it was apparent that Jason wasn't listening, was already falling into the levels of deepest concentration, the preface to the conscious emptiness that was pure Force acceptance. Both paused for a long while, and then suddenly Anakin came rushing ahead, lightsaber twirling up and around, slicing down for Jason's shoulder, and when Jason easily parried, Anakin sent it around the other way, diving along the opposite angle. Jason parried that too, catching Anakin's weapon with his own, and bringing both around and down, back out to Jason's left, and then around some more. When the blades were each out straight between the brothers, Jason rolled his wrist, looping his blade further about Anakin's. But Anakin was up to the measure, and he snapped his blade straight downward to break it free of the dangerous tangle, then brought it up again fast enough to knock Jason's blade aside before his brother could put it point in at his throat and score a quick victory. Anakin brought his blade back past one shoulder and slapped it out, sparks flying as it connected with Jason's parry. Again Anakin attacked, and then again, as if he meant to beat his brother back right through a wall. "Anger betrays you," Jason said, and the words sent a chill through Anakin, words that spoke of the truth of the moment and of the dark side of the Force, a place no Jedi could ever afford to visit. Anakin's attack mellowed, went more to finesse, subtle thrusts and slashes, and deceptively slight movements to parry Jason's every attack. And so they went for many minutes, back and forth across the room, each seeming to gain a momentary edge only to lose it again through the other's quick response. They had to trust in themselves and in each other, for there were no practice modes on their lightsabers. The slightest miss or wrong deflection or too far thrust could bring serious harm. But they went on anyway, their philosophical differences playing themselves out through sword fighting, and before long, Jason's warning notwithstanding, both were into it viciously, swiping and dodging, thrusting low and high, and more than parrying, batting each other's blade aside. Jason came out of that fit first, mellowing his parries to those subtle and beautiful shifts and turns, and offering few offensive routines at all. That sudden passivity only spurred Anakin on to greater intensity. His lightsaber slashed once, twice, and thrice from the left, then he spun about a complete circuit, reversing his grip as he went, and slashed once, twice, thrice from the right. Jason parried the first three from his left, then parried again and again from the right, and then ducked. And Anakin, so into the flow, thinking to take the third parry and spin back the other way, swooshed his blade right over his ducking brother and overbalanced as the weapon hit nothing but air. Up Jason came behind it, a sudden subtle stab that sent Anakin's lightsaber flying away and made the younger boy leap back and grab his stung hand. Jason clicked off his blade. "The Force is a power within, for the good of within," he said. "We're not a galactic patrol." Anakin stared at his brother long and hard, clearly surprised that Jason, who practiced far less than he, had so cleanly beaten him. "Uncle Luke used the Force to destroy the Death Star," Anakin reminded. "And Mara uses it now to battle her disease," Jason replied. "Only when we are at peace within can we think of acting properly upon battles in the wider galaxy." Anakin didn't reply, just stood clutching his hand and staring at his brother as a long, quiet moment slipped past. "You're getting better," Jason offered, and he winked at Anakin and headed for the door. "I'll beat you next time," came Anakin's predictable call behind him, and Jason smiled all the wider as he stepped out into the corridor leading to the ladder. Down below, he heard a clank of metal and a few more curses from his frustrated father, who was still hard at work. "You're going to cross the lines," Han yelled. Chewbacca howled, and there came a sharp, sparking retort, followed by Han's "Yow!" Chewie's head popped up through the open service panel. "Get back here, hairball," Han cried. Chewbacca came out of the hole in a single graceful spring, or at least it seemed that way to Jason until he noticed his father's arm sticking out of the hole behind the Wookiee, a sparking cable in hand, and the wisps of smoke wafting off of Chewie's bottom. He couldn't help but chuckle, but he tried very hard to suppress it when the Wookiee stormed up to him, rubbing his bottom. "Ah, aya!" Chewie scolded. "I didn't do it," Jason exclaimed. "It was Anakin." Chewie howled again. "No, we're not all the same," Jason protested. The Wookiee threw his arms out wide, covering about a 3-meter expanse, fingertip to fingertip, and shook his huge hairy head, growling and roaring. "I never said you could snap-turn the Falcon," Jason argued, "and I never did snap-turn the Falcon. Talk to Anakin." "Ah, ah, ah. You think you might wander over and help me with this compensator?" Han asked dryly, turning the Wookiee about. He held a pair of cables in his hand, one of them throwing the occasional spark, and his face was covered in grease so that his eyes and teeth shone brightly in contrast. Jason laughed again, or started to, until Chewie spun back around and glowered at him. Nothing like a Wookiee glare to sap the mirth. "Well?" Han asked, and with a resigned roar, Chewie turned about and headed back for the opened service panel. A short time later, Mara, Jaina, and C-3PO found their friends at work on the Falcon, while Leia headed off to issue her full report to the Council. Jaina wasted no time in pulling her brothers aside and dazzling them with her tale of evading the Z-95 headhunters. Anakin puffed up with satisfaction as she recounted the story, taking it as proof of his understanding of the Force. Jason didn't bother to start up the argument again. Similarly, C-3PO rushed to R2-D2 and began spewing every detail of the adventure with Nom Anor. A most disagreeable person. R2-D2 clicked and whistled, seeming impressed, especially when C-3PO told of his final encounter with the Romulan leader, one in which he had faced down the mighty Nom Anor. Mara, meanwhile, filled in Luke about the deadly intervention by Worth Skidder. "He's a hair trigger," she explained. "You're sure he wasn't just trying to help?" "We didn't need his help," Mara answered resolutely. "And he knew it, too. The Jade Saber's got more than enough firepower to blast a few headhunters. Besides, by the time he got near to us, we were breaking clear. No, Worth just wanted some kicks, and to add a couple of kill markers under his canopy." Luke shrugged, feeling more than a little helpless. 100 Jedi Knights roam the galaxy now. How could he keep them all under wraps? "One at a time," Mara said, and when Luke looked at her curiously, she merely returned a wistful smile. "You're hearing all the problems, and they seem like they'll overwhelm you. But that only means you have to deal with them one at a time. Your sister put Worth in his place, for now at least, so I don't think you need to worry about him for a while." "How do you feel about a trip to the Outer Rim?" Luke asked her, and now it was Mara's turn to offer a curious expression, and Luke's to give a wry grin. He fell over her then in a great hug and a heartfelt laugh. He always felt so much better when his wife was around. Chewie stood quietly outside the council chamber, leaning back against the wall, his hands behind his head. When Mara and Jaina had come to the Falcon, Han had sent the Wookiee here to escort Leia, but Chewbacca understood that he had really been sent here just to get him away from Han and the Falcon. The repairs weren't going so well, and Han and Chewie had spent the bulk of their last hour together just howling at each other. They both needed a break, and Chewie was glad for it. But when one of the counselors, Fjor Rodan of Kaminor, came out of the room unexpectedly and began wagging his finger at Chewie, and grumbling about some intractable argument over certain trade privileges with Chewie's home planet of Kashyyyk, the Wookiee realized that he hadn't been away from the yelling Han for long enough. Leia came out of the council chamber a few moments later and dropped her head in her hands. There, across the hall and in a closet, hung Fjor Rodan, his collar hooked on a coat rack. "Let me compliment you on your choice of friends," the counselor said dryly. "Chewie, take him down," Leia instructed. Chewbacca growled and shook his head. "Counselor Treebok will hear of this," Fjor Rodan threatened. "You know Treebok, don't you?" he taunted Chewie. Chewie closed the closet door. "You can't go around treating counselors like that," Leia scolded, coming forward. But then she stopped, considering the meeting she had just walked out of, the unending squabbling over minor details, the open disdain two of the counselors had shown to her concerning her failure at Osirian Romamul, the obvious posturing for political reasons. "Let's go," she said, turning down the corridor, Bulfur gliding behind her. "Ah?" Chewie asked, and when Leia turned back, the Wookiee motioned for the door. "With any luck, they won't find him until after we've left," Leia explained. Chewie gave an assenting howl, and off they went. Leia's mood improved immediately, and greatly, when they finally reached the Falcon, when she saw again that glimmer in her husband's eye. After all these years, the fire remained between Leia and Han, a deep and honest love and respect. "Chewie found you," Han remarked, moving to give Leia a big hug. "Probably heard you yelling from six levels away."
"Mara told you about Gnome Anor," Leia reasoned.
"And about Worth Skidder," Luke added, coming down the landing ramp. Leia sighed and shook her head.
"You've got to do something about that one," she replied.
"One problem at a time," Luke explained.
"What now?" the exasperated Leia asked.
"Well, we're going on a little trip," Han told her.
"Far away, I hope," Leia added.
Han laughed. "About as far as you can get."
"And it still won't be far enough for me," Leia said, turning back to glower in the general direction of the Senate building.
"Could anyone do enough to satisfy that group?"
Luke chuckled, knowing the answer.
"No one point of view would ever satisfy, so..." He paused, looking for just the right word. "Eclectic a group."
"How diplomatically put," Leia said.
"So what's the problem now?"
"I'll fill you in on the way.
Jedi?"
Han's chuckle told Leia that she had guessed correctly, and in light of that, she was even more eager to go. A big part of her wanted a vacation from all the turmoil, but after the incident with Worth Skidder, Leia was beginning to take these Jedi problems personally. She hadn't given much thought to Luke's plans about reforming the Jedi Council, hadn't really considered it her problem, given all the responsibilities the formal authorities of the New Republic kept laying on her. But now she was beginning to see the whole picture, and better that image would be if Luke could put the Jedi Knights in order.
"We'll get to see an old friend," Han offered, and Leia looked at him curiously.
"Lando," Han explained.
So much for any thoughts of vacation, Leia realized, for any time Lando was involved, even peripherally, situations seemed to get very complicated and usually dangerous. In truth, she wasn't particularly thrilled with her husband having any dealings with Lando. The man always seemed to pull Han into something on the very edge of disaster. Of course, that only strengthened her resolve to go along.
"What about Mara?" she asked Luke, working hard to keep the signs of her deep concern only minimally on her expression.
"She's coming," Luke replied.
"She and Jaina are plotting the course even now, assuming we can get the Falcon flying again."
Leia looked at Han.
"Anakin," he explained, and somehow Leia wasn't surprised.
"Are you sure Mara's up to it?" Leia asked Luke.
"Try to stop her," Luke replied.
Leia managed a smile. For all the pain and the impending threat of death, Mara was determined to live her life fully, to live without this unknown disease being the center of her existence. That truth only made Leia even more glad to have Mara as Jaina's mentor.